Welcome back, everybody, to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm Joel Fragamenti, going to be your host here, telling you what's going on this week at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And really great interview I have with our weekend headliner, Keith Alberstadt. That'll be coming up in just a couple minutes. And then we'll talk about some sad news in the comedy world, but we'll get into that. Let's tell you what's going on this week. That's what we're here to do. Tell you what's going on this week at the Comedy Castle. Tuesday night, the 8th of October at 7:30 p.m., the Detroit to L.A. Comedy Competition returns. It's one of the last first rounds of the Comedy Challenge here. Some good people in this one, too. Paige Perry's a friend of mine. Joseph Naman is a funny guy I've done a bunch of open mics with. Doug Henry, Gina Joy Romer, and more. Mike Boone's really funny. I mean, it's going to be a great show. You got Tam White closing it out, and a former student of mine, Dale Rogers, hosting. So it's always worth coming out, checking out. And you get to vote in this round of the Detroit to L.A. competition. So that's Tuesday, this evening, as you're probably listening to this, most of you, the 8th of October, and then Wednesday, the 9th, the Beginner Comedy Class Showcase, the 101 Comedy Class Showcase. Bill Bouchard's students, they perform for you, and it's always a fun show there. Bunch of people who are just getting into comedy, and their friends and family come out, and it's always an exciting show there. That's at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the 9th. As you'll hear in our interview, this Thursday, the 10th, Keith Alberstadt is headlining the Comedy for a Cause for the Furniture Bank of Metro Detroit. It's a great cause. That show begins at 6 p.m. If you want those tickets, you will see the link. We will link you to it from comedycastle.com. So go over there. Great cause. Furniture Bank has done fundraisers at our club for quite a while now, annually. And they're a great group. They always give a nice presentation about the work they're doing. And you get a great meal, and Keith is fantastic. So that's a great show for you on Thursday if you want to help out. And then Keith has his Friday and Saturday night shows, 7:15 and 9:45 on Friday, the 11th of October. Saturday the 12th, 7 p.m. and 9:30, as always. ComedyCastle.com has those tickets for you. With Keith Alberstadt, who you're going to hear from in just a couple of minutes, and Andrew Joback and Jason Jamerson, who's been a guest on this show. They're going to be the openers this weekend. So great lineup. Great lineup. Great week to come out. Support live comedy. Let's tell you about the sad news. Many of you, if you are a comedian or a big fan of comedy, you may have already heard that we lost one of the all-time greats in Michigan comedy. I don't think anyone would quibble with that description of Norm Stoltz. He was a giant. He was a small man, but a giant talent and a beloved man in the Michigan comedy scene. For anyone that saw Norm, you would know him as Michigan's premier storyteller. He was always a storyteller. And you'll hear that in the interview we have with him in a little bit. I'll explain that as we get to the end here. But he had a long battle with esophageal cancer that finally took Norm's life here in the past week. And not only was Norm an incredible comedian, but he was a generous and kind soul. He was always smiling. Everyone will know that about Norm. Always smiling, always encouraging. Supportive of everybody on the scene and myself included. I remember I met Norm, I believe it would have been in 2022, maybe early 2020. No, not 22. No, geez. 2002, over 20 years ago. Yeah, it was 21 or 22 years ago. We worked together at Chaplin's Comedy Club. And I know he had a heart attack recently. And he was coming back to comedy and had a little new lease on life. 20 years ago, he got a new lease on life. And he lived a good long time and entertained tons of people. I had the pleasure of working with Norm for years and years on the road when I was the road comic. And, of course, the Comedy Castle, he headlined so many times. I believe he taped a special at the Comedy Castle. I remember camera crews doing a big old three-camera shoot there with Norm. And always animated, funny, charming. Everybody loved Norm, and everyone loved the comedy of Norm. And, you know, when we found out he was sick, and that would have been about 3 years ago, I said, you know, it was just so hard for people to know what he was going through. And yet when you saw Norm, you always got a big hug. He always had that smile. And he just made you feel like $1 million. Anytime you were in the room with him, on stage or off, any room that Norm was in was a better place. It was a place you wanted to be. And I was so lucky to just have that opportunity. And what you'll hear today, after we talk to Keith here, is going to be an interview with Norm that we conducted here on the Comedy Castle podcast. Again, about it was August of 19, so a little over 5 years ago. I think it was originally show 22. And I was able to sort of take that interview, remaster it, and we'll put it at the end here after we hear from Keith. We record Tom McCarthy, of course, was the host of the show, and I believe he recorded it right here in my studio. And you can hear me laughing a few times, and Norm does make reference to me being in the room. And yeah, it's it was great listening to this interview, I will say. You know, knowing what he went through and that I'll never speak to him again, to hear his voice was wonderful. And I hope you guys stick around after I talk to Keith to listen to Tom and Norm, because it's a great talk. You'll hear how Norm got started. You'll hear, you know, what he's very proud of, which is, you know, the Michigan comedy scene. And he says it. It's the last thing he says, you know, loves the comedy scene, puts it up against anybody. And, you know, gives lots of credit to comedians that you may know, like Brad Wenzel, Matt McClowry. And, you know, talks about how proud he is seeing those guys go on to have great careers, starting as openers for Norm, as we all did in the last, you know, 30 years of comedy here in Michigan. So it really just, you know, as great a talent as you would ever want to see. And he'll talk about why, you know, was he a nationally famous guy? No, but he had a family and he loved his family and his family loved him. And again, just I have to just say personally that Norm, and I speak for a lot of folks, I mean, my Facebook feed was just all Norm, all this past weekend, all Norm. And I loved it. I love seeing all the tributes, seeing all the photos. And this is my tribute to him that you'll hear later on this show. But first, we'll start with Keith Alberstadt. Keith had been on the show before, but I had never talked to him. So it was nice talking with Keith. One of the nicest guys in the business, not unlike Norm Staltz. Keith now may hold that crown for himself as the nicest guy in the business. He'll tell you how he got started in comedy, went from Nashville to NYC. He'll talk about his mentors, the people that helped him out, why he's always a great pick to have at your fundraiser, as we have here on Thursday, why it's not always great to ask a comedian, not always great to request a bit from a comedian. I stepped in that one. You'll hear that story. And you'll also hear how we did some giant shows with Nate Bargatze recently. I was very interested in those. So great talk with Keith, family man, got the kids. He's very happy to come home to them, as I understand, as I look at his Instagram, as I'm talking, saying these words. Keith seems very happy. So, again, this is another week. We had it last week, right? With Tom Cotter, with Brad Upton on Sunday night this past week. Comics that you can bring mom, dad, the kids do if they're over 18, and everyone laugh together. Keith is one of those guys. Let's throw it to that interview with Keith Alberstadt. Right after that, we'll hear from the Norm interview from 2019, and then I'll come back to wrap it up after that. All right, here's Keith Alberstadt, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, it's a privilege and an honor to speak to Keith Alberstadt, our weekend headliner. Keith, welcome to the Comedy Castle podcast.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be back.
It is good to be. Well, it's good to be back. I don't think I've ever talked to you. I think you might have talked to Tom McCarthy. He used to do
that. That's right. Yeah. That's, well, it's good to be back on the podcast.
You're right. It is the same podcast. Yes. It is technically. I was the producer of that show, so I edited that interview, but I did not conduct it. Yes. We had a crossed wire last year, if you remember that.
I do remember that, and I'm looking forward to getting back to Ridley's.
So, Keith, last year, I think I just emailed you through the website and didn't hear anything. And then you showed up, and I didn't bring it up. It was a little awkward.
That was got spammed out, whatever the situation was.
But then,
I didn't see it until too late.
Yeah, and then tell everybody what you did. You sent me an email weeks after.
I did. Yeah. I was like, sorry, I'm just now seeing this. It was like a week after the show's over.
Absolutely. I completely used it. But you said next time we're doing it, and you were a man of your word.
That's right. That's right.
So that's okay.
I'm looking for it. This is one of my favorite stops of the year, by the way, is Royal Oak, Michigan. It's a great club.
And I want to thank you for doing this. And I also want to let you know that you're not here for like 4 days or whatever. I will try to rehab your image to that staff. Because I've been trashing you for a year saying, oh, he blew me off. I will apologize and say, no, Keith's a good guy. All that stuff I said, nah, he's great. Trust me. I take it all back.
Well, I appreciate that.
The staff will look at you like always. Nothing to worry about. But it's a great week.
You know what I love about the staff there?
Yeah.
They've got the, there's an entrance to the bar area and they're busy. They're always busy. Yeah. I never want to bother anybody with whatever. I just want a cup of coffee and they've got this little, it's right off to the side. Mm-hmm. And it's just simple. They're cool with me just going back there in the bar area, getting my own coffee and not. So it's just a simple process and good cup of coffee before the show. And it's great.
Yeah.
Simple things. It's the little simple things, Joel, in life that make it that make a difference.
Well, I'll tell you this: getting your own coffee there, even for me, been on the staff for 13 years, can be sort of a dance. You know, you don't want to. There's servers moving backwards and stuff, and you don't want to run into them.
That is true. Yes, you have to time it. It's like Frogger. You know, you have to time it right. You see somebody come in with a tray of drinks, maybe you wait a couple of seconds.
But I also believe that our staff gives you a little bit of reverence and they sort of look and say, what's Keith Albersett? We got to just kind of keep our, mind, we don't want to bump into him because then we'll lose our jobs because he'll complain to Ridley.
I imagine that's how they treat every headliner and every comedian, actually.
Well, they don't treat me that way.
The staff at Ridley's. Appreciates comedy. They run the room great. They manage the room great. They treat the people who are there for the show great. So they treat the comedians and everybody there very well.
Yeah. Well, you really are held in such high regard. I think every week, I tell me if I'm wrong on this one. Have you done some sort of fundraiser pretty much every week you've worked the Comedy Castle?
I believe that's true. Yeah. And we got another one this Thursday.
We sure
for
do. Furniture Bank.
Furniture Bank. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
which I don't believe they've had a fundraiser there. That's
they've had them without you, Keith. They've had other headlines. Yeah, Furniture Bank's an annual thing. You were the dog guy for a while.
That's right.
You were
the leader
dog for the blind or whatever. I don't know if that was the charity.
Yes, yes. And that was always fun because a lot of the dogs are under the table. Mm-hmm. You can't even see them. And then they sometimes they'll. You hear a sneeze or a little, they don't really bark, because they're well trained, but you hear some kind of a, it's like you ever go on a plane and there's a service dog, you don't even know it's there until you're leaving. And he's like, you finally see it like by your feet. Like, I didn't even know there's a dog there.
Yeah.
But the dog people came annually for a while. And I imagine Furniture Bank was an annual thing.
They are an annual thing. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's always a good one. That is on Thursday night. I'll, of course, plug it throughout the show on the wrap-up and all that stuff. We'll tell you everything that's going on this week. But, yeah, man, it's always great to have you. And when you're a guy, and you must know this, when you're a guy that gets picked to be the talent for a fundraiser, that's a pretty good thing to be. that means the club really trusts you.
Well, yeah, I do a lot of charity and corporate stuff throughout the year. And yeah, Mark's known that. And it's always a good time. And it's always he always has good causes that are there. So it's a good match.
Yeah.
I just did a show in Hattiesburg, Mississippi for a great organization for the fourth time, the fourth time in 8 years, called Laughs for Life, which is for cancer research. And Hattiesburg, Mississippi. It's always a good time. And so yeah, charity events, fundraisers, corporate events like that, as well as comedy club work. It keeps me busy. It's fun.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I don't know what you can pay, but the money's good too. It's not you do some charity function, it's going to pay better than the bar one nighter.
Well, that's true. The bar one nighter with the $5 Goldschlager shot special is probably not going to give you a big check at the end of the night.
I know. It's been so long since I've done one of those. I almost miss them.
Almost. You know, when you start out doing comedy, that's the fun of it, man. Because you don't know. You're grabbing at everything. You just want stage time, and you don't know what you're going to get. And it could be a surprise show. For like people who don't even know comedy's going on that night.
Yeah, right.
They're there to watch the game. Then all of a sudden the bartender pulls the plug on the TV and angers 100 people and now go up and tell some jokes.
Surprise comedy.
But it's, those first few years of doing that, it's a good times.
Well, let's talk about you starting out. My notes have here, Nashville is where you're from, and you started comedy in Nashville?
I did. Born and raised Nashville, started at the club there and open mics around town, and then went full time at it and just started working the road in Southeast and Midwest and just kept going and moved to New York a few years after that.
Yeah.
And still work the road, but based in New York. Yeah. Now I'm in New Jersey, but just outside New York.
Yeah.
So that was fun. And Nashville is such a great place to start. As a road comic, because it's so central to so many great cities with comedy clubs and comedy scenes.
Yeah.
So it was easy to, I shouldn't say easy, but it was, it made it easier as a road comic to stay busy and keep your calendar somewhat full and build up that foundation.
Mm-hmm. Was there any, even if they're not famous people, were there comics that said, hey, you come open for me? Were there mentors, guys that took you under their wing?
Yeah, there were a few, and it wasn't just like, it wasn't necessarily a touring thing, but it was come open for me, you know, for, one or two dates here and there. And then, that would lead to more dates. James Gregory, who, just passed away, God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. He was a legend, and I opened for him a couple of times, years ago. And, even after I moved to New York, you know, I would work with him a couple of times. But there was, I opened for, Kathleen Madigan a few times. I'm trying to think, but throughout the years, it was, there were a handful of bigger comics who would say, come open for me. And then that would open some more doors as well as just the experience of working in front of bigger crowds and more stage time and bigger venues and all that just, you know, like I said, builds up that foundation.
Yeah. You watch that person work every night.
Exactly.
When you're done, you sit there and watch. Yes. That's how it's done. You watch them.
You watch the craft of, they're building, not just building a joke, but building an act and seeing how you're working the crowd and how the show goes as an entire. Yeah, absolutely.
You go, they make it look easy.
They do. It's just like everything else.
They do, yeah.
It's not. And I often equate it to any other profession, like just take sports. You know, when you watch a professional athlete, no matter what the sport, and they make it look easy and they make it look so easy. Like, you know, I want to get out there and do that. Mm-hmm. Or to the point where some people like watching baseball say, I could hit this guy. Like, no, you can't. No, you can't hit this guy. He's pitching 95.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that you're exactly right. You know, sitting back and watching the comics who've been doing it for so long and doing it great for so long. Mm-hmm. you definitely learn a thing or two for sure. Well,
that's you now. You're that guy.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think so. I think someone opening for Keith is a big deal.
Well, thank you.
I think so. Thank you. Because, you know, you're going to have great shows. You're going to have great crowds. You're a nice guy, which, you know, not all of the guys you work with coming up are nice. I've certainly had a few of those over the years that were not nice to me at all or were threatened by me or whatever it is. There's a lot of ego. And,
right.
You know, you get a guy who's not, doesn't have an ego. It's nice. It's easy to work with.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, it's been fun, and that's why I'm looking forward to just, you know, doing some good shows in front of great crowds, and I always work with great comedians, not just here, but along the road, and looking forward. It's going to be a great weekend. Yeah, if you haven't been to Ridley's, I'm sure people who listen to this podcast are familiar with what an experience is at Ridley's and how great the shows are.
Yeah.
But if you haven't come, you got to get to a show this weekend. And if you have come, if you've come to see my show before, I welcome you back. Come see another one and bring some friends.
Yeah, and it's one of the things, too, that and comics will always say this to the audience, and I don't think our audience, some of them are even aware of this, about how good the Comedy Castle is compared to other places, that you might Absolutely. Go see a show in another town, and it's just not the same thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you gotta, no doubt about it.
Come out. See what's going on. Raise some money for charity here on Thursday. Too,
exactly.
If you want,
exactly.
Have a buffet dinner. Come on now. All right, let's
I forgot about the buffet.
The buffet dinner. Yeah. Well, you show up and get you. There'll be dinner for you if you want it.
I forgot. Come on, people. There's a buffet. How do you pass that? You're raising money for a good cause and you get to eat at, and I'm assuming when you say buffet dinner, yes. Joel, you mean all you can eat.
All
buffet.
You can eat. Yes.
Oh. Get people, come on! You make your money back in two helpings.
Exactly, all you can eat. It's terrific. You see a great comedy show right after that. What could be better than that? All right, let's talk about your. I guess we'll talk. This is all ties together, but your family is growing. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. The last time I did this podcast, my wife and I had two babies, mm-hmm. and now we have three.
Yeah.
Our little boy just turned one. So we have two girls mm-hmm. and a little boy. So their ages are 4, 2.5, and 1. Nice. So it's a lot of material for one thing.
Yeah, I was going to say that must be. I mean, no shortage of things to talk about on the stage at this point, but.
Yeah, they're hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great. And it's just amazing to watch them grow. Our son, who just turned one,
okay.
he is the same weight, if not a little heavier, than his 2.5-year-old sister.
Oh, wow.
He's a beefy dude.
Yeah.
We're getting letters of interest from Division I football coaches.
That's right. You can sign a...
It says, call us in 16 years. That's all it says. you know those flip the flap books, Joel, where the books, like, they you flip over a flap to see, like, hey, what's behind the barn?
And
you
yeah,
flip
okay. it over. It's a kid's like, book. Yeah, like, yeah.
Right. He rips off all the flaps. Like every flap he gets to, he reaches for like he's just going to turn it to see what's behind it. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he rips it out of the book. We have a whole shelf full of nothing but flaps. It's become a game. We try to figure out what flap goes with what book, and
wow.
And now there's no more surprises in the books. Like what's behind the barn? Well, what barn? What are you talking about? Did a twister come through last night? So, all I see is it.
So keep them away from the library. I think that's
for sure. For sure.
Well, I guess that shows. I don't know what that'd be. Big kid, and he's strong. It could be an. Were you an athlete growing up? Did you do some sports in your youth?
I played some.
Okay.
You know, I have asthma. I had it a lot worse.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you talk about that in the show. Yeah.
So I was limited. I played Little League baseball and always stopped at first, no matter how far I hit the ball. I didn't feel like running.
Yeah.
I was stretching triples into singles, Joel. let's see. I played a little football mm-hmm. in grade school.
Yeah,
but let me tell you, when you're I was the quarterback.
Oh, nice.
When your quarterback runs the option and he has asthma, there's only one option. It's a fumble. We ran that to perfection, Joel.
Well, that's...
But I did play. I was competitive. Yeah. I always loved to get out there and play. But yes, I was somewhat limited. But yeah. But little league baseball, which I think every kid should play little league baseball. It's that was a blast.
Yeah.
And then a little football. And I got into basketball later, but I didn't play competitive. I didn't play like a team sport. No. I just played like recreationally. Yeah. But I kind of, looking back, I wish I would have played basketball. But yeah, but so I was a little bit of an athlete, I guess. But
yeah. So
I was more of a nerd. I was more of a nerd than an athlete. But yes, he's definitely got. He's definitely going to be a ball player when he gets older. I think
that's all right.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I don't need these books. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He devours books, but not in an academic way.
A good way. All right. That's interesting. And then now, is it harder to go on the road now? It must be. I mean, to leave these little ones behind and go tell jokes in some town that you've been to 100 times.
Yeah, it's always a little difficult to leave. They're hard to leave.
Yeah.
But that's what makes coming home so much better.
There you go.
My trips are a lot shorter than they used to be. You know, when I was working the road, I was, I was on the road for, long stretches, 2-3 weeks, even longer than that.
Right.
And but yeah, it's definitely now I'm out on the road for maybe 3 nights, mm-hmm. 2 nights, 3 nights.
Yeah.
So, and with corporate gigs, the corporate gigs is you fly in, you do a show, you fly back the next day. So it's those are nice too.
Make those.
So
work.
They're hard to leave, but. Mm-hmm. But it's what I do. So
it's what you do. You ain't stopping.
That's right.
No plan right. B at this point. It's just
when I look at the grocery bill that my son's going to give me in a few years, I'm going to have to work the road a lot.
Go by for 3 weeks again. I'm going to do these cruise ships for a month and I'll be back and.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's tough, man. I mean, that I know, because I would stay out. I think the longest when I was a road comic I ever stayed away was a little over 2 weeks, but I had nothing to come home to. I came home and there was nothing there. It was just like,
yeah,
I'll be out here. This is fine. I don't care. I'm living out of this hotel room. It's good. No worries.
Yeah, I remember in the early days I did that. I booked a bunch of one-nighters out west. Mm-hmm. Simply because I just wanted to see that part of the country. So that was the time I had. And I knew I was probably going to lose money on it, given gas and other expenses. But I did it because I got to drive through Yellowstone. I got to see the Dakotas and it was great. So that was a different time, when you can, you have that, you can afford to get out there for 2 or 3 weeks. But
I remember
don't want to do that now.
Yeah, I remember going. I would go to the Southeast. Those would be my long trips, Florida and the Carolinas and stuff, Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, but then I know looking back, because I know something was about, I was on the road and the DC Sniper was out. Do you remember that story, the DC Sniper? So I was a road comic, and I was like, I was a road comic. I remember being on the road like that whole week, and I remember driving through areas where the DC Sniper was and stuff. So I was watching this, like, I don't know if it was Dateline or something about it. And the one thing I noticed that really stuck out to me, this was just a year or two ago, was the gas was like $1.30. So I'm like, no wonder I was on the road for weeks at a time. It was $1.30. I could go to Florida and make $100 a night and still make money. It's $1.30 for gas.
Wow.
Days are over.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you see it, you ever drive past, like when you're on the interstate and you drive past a gas station, like kind of off the side of the road, but you can still see the sign and it says like $1.89 a gallon. And then that's closed. They should just have a sign that says closed.
That's the price when they went out of business. Yeah.
That's no longer an active gas station.
Yeah. That's, gas. I mean, that's the thing for comics now. People coming up and you'll be like, because I remember my thing was like, well, you can live on feature money. I remember guys telling me that, and I did that for a while. Guys were like, you can live on feature money if you're working every week, make that $350, sell some shirts.
Yep. Yeah. Sell a little merchandise after the show, of course.
Yeah. You can live on that. I'm like, yeah, I guess. I did that. I survived, but
yeah, that's what you got to do.
Not like it is now. All right, let's talk about this. Nate Bargatze took you out into arenas. How was that? You're playing.
That was unbelievable.
I looked at photos. You're in the round. You're in the center of this thing. That must have been amazing.
It was amazing. It's unbelievable. It's it's just a great experience. Yeah. You know, I've known Nate for a long time.
Right, yeah.
So to see him climb the ladder, and I knew him before he moved to New York, and then after he moved to New York, so to watch this rise and up to super stardom has been really, really cool and fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And those shows themselves, he's a great guy, and his family's, I've known his family for years, and sometimes his dad, who does magic, is there on the road, and they're just fun people to be around and cool shows to do. The crowds are great, but also huge.
Yeah.
So yeah, those were really fun experiences. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Nate did the Comedy Castle for years and years. And in the beginning, no one knew who he was.
Yep.
Amazing to see that. Yep.
That's what I often tell people that, when they occasionally, like in a comedy club, will have like, a guest set or an open mic, and I'll tell the crowd, pick your favorite comic out there. Mm-hmm. They all started doing open mics and guest sets and stuff. Yeah. There was a time when nobody knew who they were. Mm-hmm. So to watch the open mics and the newer show, the newer comedians do these shows, because like you said, nobody knew who Nate was several years ago, and now everybody knows who Nate is.
Yeah, right.
So to watch that's really cool.
Yeah, we had a guy named Gerard Carmichael pop in years ago.
Yeah.
And you see him now, and it's like he's in movie. I was watching, like, what was it, Poor Things, and he's in, like, yeah, he was at the club. He did a guest spot.
And that's one thing about the Comedy Castle that I like, as well as other comedy clubs, but especially the Comedy Castle, because it's been around for decades. As you look at the walls, you look at all the headshots, and you're like, wow, this person performed here, and you can see how young they are in the picture. Yeah. I've always liked looking at comedy club walls, especially Wrigley's, because it just goes back years and years.
And then when civilians do it, they'll say to us that he was here. He was here. It's like, no, we just put up a picture of him because we like young Dana Carvey. We think he's hot. Right. We put him on the wall. No, of course he was here.
And we wrote on there, thanks, Ridley's.
Yeah, right. Well, Mark sent away for that. He sent a self-addressed stamped envelope to Los Angeles. And the guys came in, they did it. And people don't realize. But the people you're seeing now with the clubs will be those big stars one day.
Right.
One day. You're a pretty big star as it is, dude. You're in demand.
I'm doing what I can.
You're in demand.
I enjoy it. Yeah. I enjoy it.
It's great. And people love seeing you. People love having you. They come back every year. These charities, they want you every year. It's always good. It's good to be in demand. I know. As a comic who's been both, I've been in and out.
I will say that. It is good to see, because I do have some people who come to the show or come to my show every time I'm at Ridley's. And it's so cool to see those familiar faces. Mm-hmm. Enjoying another show. Some stuff they may recognize from last year. Some stuff is brand new. So it's like, and like I said before, if you bring a friend, if you have been to the show before and come back, bring somebody who hasn't been to the show. Because if you like my brand of humor, chances are people who also will. So I invite you to invite others.
Well, it's fun to watch somebody get turned on to something that you like. When you bring him to a show, this guy's funny. I don't know. I'm skeptical. I watch this.
I'm always working on new stuff, and I've got a lot of new stuff. And there's sometimes, occasionally, I'll have somebody come up to me after the show and say, "Hey, you didn't do this one joke. I told my friend here that you were going to do." it's all in good fun. He's like, "Well, you can't do everything, but the new stuff they still appreciate." So.
Here's what I did. I made an amateur mistake recently with one of the headliners. I forget even who it was, but I requested a bit that they weren't doing. I go, "Hey, you don't do that one anymore. That's one of my favorite ones. You should do that again." And then they did it one night and it died.
Probably because it was rusty.
Yeah, right? It's probably rusty. And then I felt like, oh, I just ruined the show. I personally made the show worse. This guy who knows his act, who knows what he's doing, and I screwed it all up.
I've had people, I don't think I just screwed up. Don't beat yourself up too hard about that. Yeah. He, that comic easily could have said, oh, I've retired that. I don't know how to do that anymore. That's happened to me once when somebody asked me to do a bit and it was like, I don't even know how that goes anymore. Yeah. You know, like the setup for it. But I've also had people who will shout out a joke from the audience, but it's the punchline. Like they'll shout out the punchline.
You can't do it then.
Do the Jeopardy Gatorade joke. Well, that's the Gatorade. Gatorade's the exact last word of the joke. Why do I want to do that now?
Yeah, that was my next question. Could you do the Jeopardy Gator? I'll cross it off. We'll edit that out. I'm fucking with you. I'm sorry. Hey, this was fun, dude. It was great talking to you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was fun.
And we're gonna see you this weekend. Again, big charity thing with the Furniture Bank on Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday, four shows with Keith. Always fun. Bring everybody, right? Bring mom,
dad. We should clarify, Friday and Saturday, two shows each night.
Yeah, that's right. Four shows over two nights. That's right.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see you there, Royal Oak and surrounding areas.
Absolutely. Get on out there. It's I think we've got Tigers baseball potentially that could enter.
Oh, yeah. Man. I love baseball. So it was so fun. It was really, really nice to watch them knock off the Astros.
That was great.
The Tigers came out of nowhere. What a great run they're on.
Right,
huh?
Right.
I mean, it kind of helped the Twins hit the rocks, but that's baseball for
it
you.
It was one of those things where people were just Tiger baseball. No, that's a thing we haven't followed in 10 years around here. And then all of a sudden,
I love it. I love the 162 game season. That's why when you start panicking in May and June, you're like, come on, man, we got a lot of baseball left.
It's back. Well, it's going to be a fun weekend, Keith. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I'll see you on Thursday night and have a great one, man.
Sounds good, Joel. Talk to you then.
Thank you so much. All right, Keith. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
All right, Norm Stull's on the other end of my line, and the first thing we need to establish is when I think of you, I think of Norm Stull's senior. Do I need to add the senior for showbiz purposes?
Well, what I did, Tom, was when we were young, my wife and I, we had our first child, and I thought, boy, let's name him Norm Stultz Jr. Won't that be fun? And it was fun until he got his own credit card, and then crap started going south after that. And with Facebook, he was the first one to get Facebook, and he took my name. And I tried to take him to court, and he had a bigger gun, and it was a big battle. And so many people, he was getting so many calls, and so I went to Norm Stultz Sr. I've got two Facebooks, one Norm Stultz Comic and Norm Stultz Sr., so.
Well,
I got the website, normstultz.com, so and after.
Well, it makes, it begs the question, too. When I first started emceeing shows, I kind of came under Joel's wing, you know, and I used to see Joel emceeing. Right. He was perfect at being an asshole to young comics, myself included. And I developed a line when somebody would have a particularly bad set, I would say, hey, do your parents have any children that they're proud of? So what I need to ask you is, does Norm Stultz Jr. have any dads that he's proud of? Jesus Christ, a stand-up comic dad?
we have mutual love and respect for each other's profession. Norm was a professional gymnast. He went to Michigan State on a gymnastics scholarship. He coached gymnastics in elite division all over the world. He coached at the Olympic Training Center. He coached out of a place called Queen City Gymnastics in Cincinnati. And now he became a high school science teacher about 7 or 8 years ago. And now he's out of coaching, and he's a full-time dad, great dad, great husband. And I have good respect for him. We've done shows together. We did fundraisers at his high school for their senior class. And so it was sort of a town hall kind of fill the auditorium with townspeople and work clean. And we have 6 or 7 different acts. We had musical acts, it was just a blast, absolute blast. And we got to do Abbott and Costello's Who's on First together, and we have that on film. And that's a memory that we'll always cherish.
Oh, that's
but yeah.
That's
they are proud of me. I'm proud of him. My dad is 97. He's still proud of me, but I think he's got glaucoma. He's been smoking weed, so I don't get to touch.
Well, you're
not true.
The pro that you are, you're setting me up for kind of my first question. We'll kind of establish the interview with this, because I've got to tell you, when I first came on the scene about 10 years ago, and you know, whether it's in comedy or in professional life or in life in general, I try and look at people who are ahead of me on the road, not necessarily from a chronological standpoint, not just because you're a touch older, but somebody who's doing
touch. I'm 2.5 touches older than you.
but somebody who's doing what I want to do, and they're established and they're further on. So I got to know you a little bit. We did some shows. I would ask some questions, and it seemed to me that you towed the line very well of a very well respected comic with some serious credits and some serious chops, who is also successful in professional life. And that's kind of something that I, you know, I was established in my professional life and as an adult, really before I started doing comedy. So I'm curious to know, and I know a little bit of your background, even going way back, but it seems to me that you came to a fork in the road, like many people are going to do or have done, and you could have been a full-time on-the-road comic. You were going on that trajectory. But then you also took a trajectory where you were a family man and were successful. If I remember correctly, Norm, were you a pharmacist or in pharmaceuticals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I went to, if you look at my high school yearbook, it says that my goals are to marry Sharon and to go to pharmacy school. And I did both.
Wow.
So I was already successful before I got on a professional comedy stage, but comedy allowed me to take my family all over the country. Whenever the kids weren't in school, we were on the road. Every summer, every break, you know, it was weird because when my children got to middle school, they were looking at their friends going like, you've never been to Vegas? And the kids were like, we've never been to Burton. You know, I mean,
that's right.
They didn't have, you know, Ferndale was the farthest they ever went. So they never, it was a great life, but I would not sacrifice my family for the road. And I didn't have to. And I didn't have to take crap gigs either. That was the other nice thing.
I was curious to that. And so there wasn't a definitive fork in the road where you had the ability and chops to go, air quotes here, professional as a comic, but you were already established. You had already started your family. So there was never really that pull. You felt you could balance both.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did for 20, 25 years. I had two full-time professions. I never worked a weekend in pharmacy. I was always on the road.
Okay.
So, you know, the people that I worked, anytime I was behind a counter, I worked, you know, the understanding was that I won't be here on the weekends. You can't afford me on my time. Not only, you know, financially, but personally, I would rather make mediocre money on the road and enjoy, you know, a pool with my kids in the wintertime. And, you know, it got to the point where they would call and say, will you do New Year's Eve at this place? I said, I need a hotel with a diving board because the kids were teenagers. They're like, dude, we're not going to another crappy hotel.
You're a diva. Was that in your rider, Norm? You're worse than David Lee Roth for crying out loud.
There were times where it was in the rider that the hotel had to have a diving board. So find me a nice enough place so that we could go and enjoy. What's really neat is we've got photos from years on the road, New Year's Eve gigs around the country where at 3:30 in the morning we're at some family bowling alley with party hats on and partying with my kids. And those are great memories. They recite them all the time when we're together. They remember the first show that they took me to, you know, because when they got their driver's permit, they were allowed to drive me to a show. So one of my children, the oldest one, took me to Battle Creek to Gary Fields Comedy Club. It's now defunct, but it was a beautiful venue. Another one took me to a Chaplain's down in Chaplain's West. My daughter did that when she was 15. She wore a little black dress. She goes, what are you going to wear? I said, I wear a suit. So she wears this little black dress. And I pull up, I have her drive down Telegraph to what was Chaplain's West then by 6 Mile.
Yeah.
And I said, there's valet parking. Just pull up and they'll take your car. And there were people waiting in line. I said, we don't have to wait in line. She took my arm. So I'm walking, and I was probably about 35 at the time. I was walking down past these people with a 15-year-old blonde with a little short dress on my arm, with people just giving me those devil looks like, you scumbag pig, which, you know, they had that pegged pretty well, but they didn't realize that it was my daughter. And when I got to Maureen, Mo ran the club. She goes, good evening, Norm. I said, hi, Maureen. This is Sarah. And Maureen, being a professional, good evening, Sarah. Welcome to Chaplin's. I said, it's my daughter. And she punched me right in the arm. She goes, thank you, you moron.
Oh, boy. Chaplin's. Now, see, I've got some cred here, because when I first got bit by the bug and first started doing stand up, which would have been the late 80s, early 90s. Oh, my God. Chaplin West was a rockin' and rolling club. And I did a National Lampoon comic search contest that, the first round was at Chaplin's East. The second round was at, Chaplin's West. And I just thought I was the bee's knees. I did, I remember I did a physical comedy bit about parallel parking a Yugo that on the way to the contest, I was just picturing the crowd rolling and just pee trickling out from under the chairs, applause break, and then cut to reality, just crickets. I apologize. The one and only time in my comic life I've apologized to a crowd. I probably should have apologized more, but I did on that occasion.
I actually won that National Lampoon, that Detroit chapter that went out, and we shot a Showtime special with Leslie Nielsen hosted it.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a great competition. That was back when it was a competition. It wasn't a TV show.
Yeah, and people would show up with character, and guys had characters, and I was like a 19-year-old kid with some jokes. And you were probably the guy who said to me when I came off stage, some prick pulled me aside and said, hey, do your parents have any children they're proud of?
No, I would never do that. Joel's known me long enough, and hundreds and hundreds of comics know me, but that's not how I work. I will encourage you, and if you ask my opinion, I'll be honest and give you creative criticism, but I would never tear anybody down like that. But it's neat for me to watch so many headliners now, from Joel to Beningo to Rob Little, John Heffron, so many people that have gone on to, you know, be very successful headliners, worked with me, you know, I mean, and that includes Ralphie May from around the country. I mean, there's a number of people that I've been around long enough and toured long enough that there's some people that have made more money, but they haven't had a better life.
Well,
that's for sure.
You know, when I was getting myself in the Norm frame of mind for our interview this afternoon, I watched a few clips, and of course, we have worked together a few times. It's been a few years.
Right. So
watched some clips that were relatively recent vintage from The Castle, which were just fantastic. And I don't know how the algorithm works in YouTube, but after it cycled through a few of your clips, it went straight to John Pignette and Ralphie May. So for some reason, you're tied to the algorithm of very funny but morbidly obese comics. I don't know how that works. I'm not a tech whiz.
I used to be a lot heavier. I used to carry 60 more pounds, and I had what they call a casual quadruple bypass, and that'll change your life. I actually quit smoking. I quit drinking, and 6 months later, I had a heart attack. So I woke up and said, I want a shot of Jack and a cigar. And
holy shit. I did not know that. Well, you look fantastic. That's one good thing about showbiz and vanity coming together. You kind of have to keep yourself together. You know, you can get away with being a young kid roly-poly on stage, but there's just something about an older guy who's not well put together. A booker, I just think, will look sideways, you know? So you look, I'm not hitting on you, Norm. You know, I don't want nothing goofy here, but you're a very handsome, mature gentleman. Is that PC enough?
I know what I look like, Tom. We have mirrors. We don't keep them clean. I don't even like my toaster. I've got sort of a mesh finish too, so I don't exactly know what I look like, because it's frightening.
Well,
because I see my dad. I see my dad, which is okay.
Well, I'm
dad's. But you know, I know I'm older, and what's really fun for me professionally is when I can get off of a stage and have some 20 somethings come up and say, "Oh my God, we already Googled you. Can we get a pic?" And they take some pictures and they're all chatty. And then the next group of people come out will be in their 70s. They're like, "Oh my God, I haven't laughed that hard in ages." And to know that the material hits, it still hits the entire spectrum of the age groups out there. That's what's really, really rewarding for me, is to know that it still hits on all the cylinders. And
I'm a firm believer in karma, and in the bit I've gotten to know you over the 10 years, you put out positive energy, and I generally think that's returned. You're a well-respected guy. You're kind of one of the Yodas of the scene, so to speak. And that kind of,
I'm wrinkly.
Well, I'm interested, you know, my act, I'm essentially a storyteller, and I want to get from your perspective, when I think of you and your act. Obviously, a storyteller is one of the first adjectives, right, I would throw out. But when you were starting, did you have to have jokes to get jobs and then turned into a storyteller? Or were your stories and persona strong enough from the get that you were able? Did your act 30 years ago look and feel in some ways the way it does now? And I don't mean that disparagingly.
Yeah, it looked, in fact, I'll tell you, and I've mentioned this before at different interviews, but the first time I went to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, I had been doing music, and we weren't very good musicians. So between songs, we were doing 90 songs a night. So between songs, I would tell little stories about what happened. And after a number of months, somebody came up and said, "Try Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. They're, you know, you're funny enough." So I called and they gave me a slot. I walked in and I believe John Green was the door guy. This was on Woodward and 14 and a half below a restaurant. Went down. There was a sign that said, "Comedy, $3." So I gave him $3 and I said, "I'm doing some time." He goes, "Then you don't have to pay." So he gave me my $3 back. And I'll be honest with you, Tom, I was like, I have already made $3 in comedy. You know what I mean? It was the very first time. So I went back and I met a lot of people that are old like me now, but they weren't. Kuye was there. Of course, Tim Allen was there. Willie Tyler and Lester were there. Hey, Hey, Danny Gray, Timmy Lilly. A number of seasoned, what would be seasoned or dead veterans at this point. So I went up on stage, told my little stories. I asked for another slot the next week. I was granted one. And this time when I went down, I didn't even get my $3 out. You know, I mean, I knew that it was free. And I went back and hung out with the guys. And the third week that I went back, there was a new door guy. And I was like, I got my $3 out, because I didn't know if this John guy, you know, was just being honest or being friendly or whatever. And I said, "I'm Norm Stultz." And the guy said, this new door guy says, "Well, I heard of you. You're a storyteller." And I said, "Oh, are you new here?" And he said, "I'm Mark Ridley. I've been on vacation for 2 weeks." So that's how I met Mr. Ridley, was by asking him if he was the new guy. And he was like, "No, dipshit. I'm the owner." But he had heard at that time that I was a storyteller. So it went right from the very beginning. That was a long answer to your question.
Well, no, yes, I appreciate that, because I find it fascinating too, kind of, comparing then versus now. And as I mentioned, sometimes ad nauseum on this show, I did comedy for a couple of years in my late teens, early 20s, and then took 15 years off. So I have a brief reference point as to what things were like. This would have been in the early 90s. And obviously I have a reference point on how things are now and how they've been over the last 10 years. But when you were first coming up then, from that location, the club, I'm guessing that would have been early 80s then, correct?
That was early 80s. Yep.
Was it
early 80s?
Was it difficult to get stage time in the Detroit area then? And what did you see as the end goal if you were able to get stage time?
Well, to me, as I recall, it wasn't difficult, but I don't know how many guys called in. Lowell Sanders was there. If you know Lowell, so there's just another name that popped in, but I don't know if 50 people called and they got 20 sets. I don't know what he gave out, but it seemed whenever I was available, I was granted, you know, my 8 minutes or 10 minutes at the time. And at that point, pro shows were Tuesday through Saturday and open mic was on Monday nights. back in the day when they would do, you know, when he would be open, he'd be running 6 days. But I don't remember it ever being difficult. And I do know that at about 6 months in of working on different stories and different routines, Mark asked me if I would stop in and do Tuesday and Thursday in the feature slot, for X amount of dollars. So I never emceed. The very first time that I worked that Mr. Ridley paid me, I was in the feature slot. So, and I had enough time at, you know, even at 6 months. Of course, I've been doing, you know, music for 10 years before that and, you know, making up crap on stage. So I just used some of that. And then whatever happened in my life, and I would just tell a story. And somehow my life's funny. I don't know why, which is what I do today, is it's still relevant. I mean, everything's embellished and the timing and the words have been put in the right order, but they're relatively realistic stories that have happened, 80% of them anyhow.
Well, life is funny. I mean, it's not, many people have said this before me, but it's very true that I think a good comic sees and hears all the things that everyone sees and hears, but they're able to record it figuratively, if not literally. They're
correct.
Able to slow it
I
down and chisel out the funny of it. For instance, I was just at Grand Traverse Pie Company, kind of a big deal here in Michigan. And the guy, and this is not a bit, it might be a bit next week, but the guy was trying to sign me up for a card. He wanted, you know, the rewards club. And I do have a bit about that, but this guy legitimately wanted to know if I was part of their pie club. And I'm like, no. And he goes, would you like to sign up? It only takes a second. I was like, no, I just would like to pay for my pie. And he goes, are you sure? I said, yeah, I just don't like doing stuff like that. And he looks at me and shrugs and he goes, well, I guess not everyone's into free pie. Like, you asshole. Can't I just, isn't it enough that I'm paying $5 for some blueberry pie? Now you're going to make me feel bad about it? And I just thought that is the absurdity of life. Those are the things that happen to all of us every day. And somehow if you can capture on that, and that's what makes your act too, Norm, so relatable. It is, it's like hanging out with a guy. There's a guy up on stage that you're hanging out with and there's a lot of commonality. You don't come across as an intellectual or preaching to the crowd. And, sometimes in today's world, that's very refreshing. It's in the one way, it's kind of a throwback, but it's also very refreshing to see.
Thank you. Thanks. It's been working well and getting better and better reviews. And I'm booked into, I'm working on May of next year. So I have no complaints. But I see fun in almost everything. People ask me what's different. I go, well, I have fun at funerals. You know, I went to I don't know if you know him. I think Joel will remember. I don't know if you know him, Tom. Jim Hamm. Jimmy Hamm was,
I know
a comic
him,
in Michigan
him,
for a
yeah.
while.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Jim Hamm was very funny. And then he did radio out of Toledo. And, so at his funeral, they had a lot of audio, so it was weird to listen to him while he's laying there, you know, like so many audiences that I remember. No, that's not true, but I but to listen to him. So there was about six or seven of us. Mark Knoth was there. Chrissy Burns, the late Chrissy Burns, was with us. There was just one whole row of comics, and I happened to be on the inside, and there was a beautiful little table with Kleenex, of course, and a lamp and a couple of figurines. And when the preacher got up, he started talking, and he talked and talked, and I just reached over and turned on the light, which nobody but comedy understands. And so there's 200 people in this funeral home, and there's a row of eight of us bouncing up and down like we're farting, making them laughing, we're just dying. And that's just because it's the way comics see life. And when the light comes on, no matter what it is, you know, that's just part of the inside story. But yeah, I try to find humor in everything. I don't like it in tragedy. I'm not good at making fun of people walking, falling down steps. Now, I will film it and post it, you know, but I'm not going
to. It just made me think of up until this story, my all-time favorite funeral centered comedy bit is from the great, and I believe a mutual friend of ours, Matt McClowry, who used to have the bit about the pallbearer with a boner, and he would say, it looks like somebody's in the will.
I think McClowry's genius. And all these young kids, Wenzel and, you know, to watch them. The very first time I saw Brad, he worked with me on the west side of the state. And in a White Horse Saloon or some little saloon, and the late Ted Norkey and his wife Lynn would come every week and watch the comic. And when Brad Wenzel went up on stage and started doing his patter and his very, you know, brilliant comedy that he does, I saw Ted stand up and he started to pace. And Sharon and I both mentioned each other. He goes, he's a very much like Ted Norkey, the same delivery, the same dry. And Ted came over and he goes, that poor son of a bitch is me. I go, he is. And then he walked over, he goes, can I do 5 minutes? Now, at this point, Ted hadn't been on stage in 10 or 12 years at all. And I said, you just want to do 5 minutes? He goes, I just want to tag him with something going because we're so similar. I said, of course. And so he went up and he did his 5 minutes. And he killed, of course, because Ted was very, very funny. But the very first time I saw Brad Wenzel, I knew he was special. When I first met McClowry in the back of a Joey's, I knew he was special. And I knew that he was on the spectrum just from his eye contact and everything else that we talked.
Yeah.
And I said, what's the hardest part? And he goes, the meet and greet afterwards. You know, because on stage, you can do it, but meet and greet. Anyhow. I apologize for drifting off into stories.
But Matt,
McClowry brought that to mind, and all the kids I've watched come, you know, turn into people. You know, Landau go crazy, and just hundreds and hundreds of people. It's almost like watching your family grow up, you know, and watching them go.
Oh, there's so many terrific people. There's so many the comics that have come out of this scene just in the last 10 years just blow my mind. Obviously, I'm biased being a Detroit/Ann Arbor-based comic, but my goodness.
I would put Detroit talent against any in the country, anywhere, L.A., New York, anywhere. We might not have the same crappy attitude as New York, but.
Well, some of our best people go on and end up being some of the best people on the other scenes. And that's very gratifying to see, you know, but I'm kind of like, I'm riding your coattails, Norm. I'm a lot like you. Oftentimes I think, you know, especially after a good show, I'll be like, man, if it weren't for the wife and the kids and the $3,000 a month in mortgage payments and taxes, I could be a professional comic on the road all the time. But and then reality hits me when I look at my mortgage payments, plural, and taxes. I'm just not at that scale right now. But hey, soon. Hey, I'm opening for Norm at the Holly Hotel on New Year's Eve.
That's right.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be great.
I cleared this with Mark this morning. I, you know, some of the do's and don'ts about not promoting shows within a 50-mile radius of the club. That's good business. That makes a lot of sense. And I put it in Google Maps. It's 42 miles door to door, but he said that Holly is okay to talk about. So,
I think Mark and George Quilinius, the owner, are longtime friends. And George has been in the business a long, long time.
33.
I remember Geechee Guy would come in with his Domino's pizza delivery outfit on and ask to do 5 minutes. And I'd let him go up and he'd go up in his little shirt and hat and do his stuff. Oh my God. So many, a billion memories.
We've got a couple minutes and we've got to wrap, and I want to squeeze two things in. First of all, you're kind of starting off what we would consider our fall season at the Comedy Castle. We bring in a lot of heavy hitters from September through the end of the year. And you're kicking that off for us. So for people who have not seen a Norm Stoltz Sr. show, what should they expect? And is there anything different this time that you're doing? Are you levitating? Are you going to have pyrotechnics?
No, not gonna levitate. Well, the pyrotechnic thing, due to a court order out of Indiana, I can't start anything else on fire. It's really weird because you do so many shows and I'll have fans come up going, yet they do one of two things. You didn't do the canoe bit, which I haven't done in 12 years, you know, but they were looking for it and they brought their friends for it. Or they will say, they will come up and say, I love all the new stuff. And the thing is, by the time you do it a couple hundred times, the new stuff isn't new, but I know that the machine grows.
Right.
There's always new material in it. And, I'm always adding tags and ad libs, and it gets to the point where then an entire bit drops off. The problem with doing long form comedy is if your shortest bit is 6 minutes, as your act grows, when you take a joke out, it's a story, and you drop six minutes.
Absolutely.
You don't drop a bit. So, it's going to be a great show. I'm super excited about being there for the 40th anniversary for Mr. Ridley and the organization there. Everybody there, Joel and Bill, and of course Mary, the whole staff. All the years I've been going there, it's just been one of my favorite stages, and it's one of the best stages, best clubs in the country. Oh, there's no question about it.
We're very fortunate to have it here. You're going to be a good candidate for this question. I've not been as consistent with it as I'd like to be when we started, but because this is a podcast that emanates from, is that the right word? Is emanate? I'll have to jump. The number of words I just throw around that I don't know what the hell they mean. What a
emanates. Yeah. It starts at, it's our jumping off point.
There you go.
Or you used it wrong.
It emanates from the Motor City, basically. This is a Comedy Castle, Detroit-based podcast. Tell me about your first car. What was it? What are your recollections?
First car I owned, I owned, or that I drove?
Let's hear about both of them. You probably started driving the parents' car.
I learned to drive. Now, you got to remember, I was born a long, long time ago. I got my driver's license in 1966.
Were the tires rubber at that time, Norm?
Say it again?
Were the tires rubber at that time, Norm?
The tires were rubber. Okay. Yep, they had just gone from steel to rubber. And, but it was in a Plymouth. It was a three on the tree. It was manual transmission on the tree. Plymouth, 1953 Plymouth. I think the top end on it was about 47 miles an hour.
Oh,
but that's what I learned to drive on. The first car that I owned, my Aunt Sylvia had given my father her vehicle when she stopped driving, and this was in 1966. It was a 1955 Bel Air Chevrolet, and no one had ever sat in the back seat. It had 19,000 miles on it.
Oh, wow.
And I would borrow it, and my wife, then girlfriend Sharon, and I would go for rides, and I brought it back one day, and my dad was super pissed because I didn't put fuel in it. Back then, fuel was about 18 or 20 cents a gallon.
Oh, yeah.
And So he got mad at me, and I said, well, then why don't you sell me the car? And he says, okay, fine. He's house sales. I said, how much do you want for it? And he said, I just put $5 worth of gas in. You give me the $5. So for $5, I got a cherry 1955 Chevy that if I had today, I could sell and pay off a Florida house. But, you know, we all have our crosses to bear. Yeah. But I drove a 1955 Chevy was the first one that I owned. And then numerous vehicles since then.
Well, yep. I'm a huge car guy. I love cars. I can be a pain in the ass, though. I still, to this day, when I shop for a new car, I demand a bench seat versus bucket seats. And they're like, well, what the hell would you want a bench seat for? And I say, I like to have sex in my car. You ever had to try have sex on a bucket seat, Norm? That'll really mess you up.
Well, I have a friend that says, he said, I used to make love in a Volkswagen Beetle. He says, now I can't fit into one. So, you know, life changes as you get older.
I think I'm headed on that trajectory. Norm, you are the best. I appreciate you. I know you're up at the lake and it's a summer day, but I sure appreciate you doing this. And
it's my pleasure.
Really
my
looking pleasure. Forward to seeing you next week and looking forward to working with you at the tail end of the year.
Cool. Thank you very much, Tommy. Thanks, Joel. I appreciate everything. And like I said, I'll take the Detroit comedy scene and put it up against anybody.
Wave that flag. Run it up the flagpole and see who salutes it. Take care, Norm.
All right, man. Bye-bye. Thank you, guys. Have a great day, everybody.
There it is. Norm Stoltz. Thank you again. A pleasure to have been your friend. A pleasure to have been a man who shared a stage with you, who shared a room with you. And I will never forget those days. Such a great in comedy. You will never be forgotten, Norm. And it was my pleasure, if you enjoyed that talk, to bring that to you today. Just a huge loss. And we'd like to remember those who are no longer with us on this show. And Norm, a great, never to be forgotten by anyone who saw him. Norm Stultz. Thank you for that. Again, we want to thank you guys for listening to this show. Keith Alberstadt, of course, this weekend, one of the greats. Always look forward to his week. He comes back every year. If you come back every year to the Comedy Castle, you're doing great. And Keith is. Want to thank you all for listening to this show. Don't forget the comedy classes. Always starting with Bill Bouchard, the 101 comedy class. I've got another advanced comedy class coming up on October 19th. So that's just a little over a week away. So sign up for that one. Call the club at 248-542-9900 to inquire about comedy classes. All the tickets, of course, at comedycastle.com. Let's get out of here, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Rest in peace, Norm. We love you, and we'll never forget you, buddy. Good night.